Welcome to the Capital News. I am your host, Alex Kritis. Today is July 28th, 2019. I wanted to take the time on this Sunday to do a look ahead for this week because we're going to have a busy week with a lot of further economic news. There's a lot of news and data that came out last week that is going to continue throughout the entirety of this week. We also have some breaking political news that we want to talk about here briefly as well. But front and center is going to be the meeting of the Federal Reserve, the FOMC meeting, the Federal Open Market Committee. They are convening this week for 2 days to set interest rates. What are they going to do? That is the big question. That is what markets, global markets, by the way, have been on pins and needles at the edge of their seat waiting for really the past couple of months. Because we had earlier the chairman of the Federal Reserve, Jerome Powell, give his semi-annual testimony before Congress, where he all but stated explicitly that the Federal Reserve is ready to cut interest rates. Well, now it's time for action. Have the markets in anticipation of an easing cycle, or at least the start of perhaps an easing cycle, or at least one interest rate cut. Again, the removal from being data dependent and wait and see to, yeah, we're going to cut interest rates because there's uncertainties. Well, folks, there's always uncertainties, especially from the Federal Reserve. They don't know what they're doing. They don't have the best predictive models out there. Time and time again, they miss the ball. We talk about this on this podcast all the time. But nevertheless, they have been moving markets. Has a lot of this interest rate cut, has this easing cycle already been priced into the market? If it has, to what extent? So if we get an interest rate cut this week from the Federal Reserve, will markets continue their rally? Because while we had a very poor month of May, we had an extremely strong month of June, and we continue through the month of July to make new record all-time highs with respect to the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ, and the Dow Jones Industrial Average is not far behind. However, the Russell 2000, the small cap index, isn't anywhere close to its all-time highs back in 2018, which to us here, our analysis at the Capital News is indicating that the domestic economy is really slowing down. That the rest of this is, it's a defensive play. Everybody knows the big names. The Dow Jones Industrial Average is only comprised of 30 companies. S&P 500 is 500 companies. It's actually a little bit more than that. I think it's 505 now, but nevertheless, it's 500 companies. And the NASDAQ is comprised of a handful as well. So it's not the broader market. It's not 2,000 stocks. It's not 3,000 stocks. It's not what we're talking about here when you look at the small caps. So these are defensive plays. This is big money. This is some strong cash flow in some of these bigger companies. They pay a dividend. So it's wait and see mode. It's being defensive. If you go out further on the risk curve, then yeah, you might have an appetite for some mid-cap stocks or even small-cap stocks. Will that happen if the Federal Reserve and other central banks, especially the major central banks, prime the pump, get the printing presses going, embark on an easing cycle, and perhaps even embark on further rounds of quantitative easing? Will people get pushed out further onto the risk curve like they already have been for the past decade? Will they rotate out of some of these more defensive stocks and into the mid-cap or small caps, and then we might see a rally in those indices as well? We are living in uncharted territory. We are living in the midst of a global economic experiment being run and manipulated by central bankers, some federal governments. Of course, there's always some politicking behind the scenes. We don't know when this is going to end, but we pretty much know how it is going to end, and it's not going to be pretty. So, with that said, we could very well see a continuation of market highs in U.S. equities and in some other stock markets around the world. Perhaps we could witness that melt-up effect. Some could probably make the argument that we've witnessed a melt-up effect because of how low we were and the beginning of this year, because we saw that 20% correction or bear market territory at the end of last year. So we were starting from a very low level, and now we have rocketed 20-25% on these major indices. Can they continue to go higher? Well, we're going to find out here shortly. Is this going to be what the markets wanted? They threw their hissy fit. They want the Federal Reserve and other central banks to come to the rescue to continue to inject the markets with liquidity, which is just simply another name right now for basically another hit of heroin, cocaine, adrenaline, whatever you want to say. These are junkies. They want their fix. The Federal Reserve and other central banks seemingly are going to come to their side as the dealer to come back and give the addict his fix. This is not how you're supposed to run a society. This is not how you're supposed to run an economy. But nevertheless, this is the world in which we live. We have to address the situation as it is, not how we wish it to be. Of course, you follow this podcast. We wish it to be that the Federal Reserve ceases to exist and the Fed abolish the federal income tax. You will start to see major corrections. You will start to see an improvement in the underlying economy and society as a whole. Will there be bumps along the way? You better believe it. That is a huge shock to the system. It's a completely different system. It's one that would resemble free market capitalism. Not this nationalization of the banking system for all intents and purposes. Not this centralization of power between the federal government and the Federal Reserve, which is true around the world with other federal governments and their respective central banks. So we have to pay attention, unfortunately, to these people. It's a true shame that the world waits on pins and needles for what a handful of individuals say and do. And sometimes you have to understand that there's a difference between what they say and what they do. And that's our job here at the Capital News, to break that down, read between the lines, and look past the headlines as to what the actual data is telling us. So, the week ahead, central banks in the U.S., the U.K., and Japan will be deciding on monetary policy this coming week. Other important releases include the following: the U.S. jobs report, trade balance figures, personal income and outlay numbers, ISM Manufacturing Purchasing Managers Index, the U.K. consumer confidence numbers, market PMIs, Eurozone Q2 GDP growth, inflation numbers, business surveys out of the Eurozone. Out of Japan, we're expected to see consumer confidence figures, retail sales, industrial production. Out of China, we're going to see PMIs, manufacturing PMIs. And out of Australia, we're going to see Q2 inflation figures. Also, what broke a couple days ago that we didn't have time to get to last week was Chinese industrial profits fell 2.4% in the first half of 2019. Profits earned by China's largest industrial firms dropped by 2.4% from a year earlier in the first 6 months of 2019 compared to a 2.3% decline in the January through May numbers. So, this is par for the course. This is no surprise to us here at the Capital News, nor should it be to our audience. We have been talking about a global economic slowdown since the start of this podcast and of this website, thecapitalnews.com, since February of this year. The writing's on the wall. The consumer is over-leveraged and is tapped out. Governments are, they are overextended themselves. Record amounts of debt. The corporations are just riddled and drowning in debt. This is why the markets are calling for more liquidity. This is why it's calling on central banks the world over to prime the pumps. Because the piper wants paid, and the piper always gets paid. But no, we are going to continue to kick the can further down the road. This is not going to end well. The further we kick this can down the road, the worse the correction will be. And that's the key word here, ladies and gentlemen. We are not supposed to fear or fret corrections. Corrections are the good thing. I know everybody wants the party to continue, but if you keep drinking and you keep drinking and you keep drinking, you're going to drink yourself to death. Or in the other analogies that I'm using here, if you're just going to continue to shoot up with heroin or cocaine or some other drug, you're eventually going to kill yourself. Now, you shouldn't be putting that stuff in your body anyways, but maybe you can tolerate one hit. Maybe you can tolerate a couple drinks, but you're eventually going to hit a limit where you're going to end up killing yourself. That's exactly what this economic experiment is doing to economies the world over. This is why you've had stagnant growth in Japan for the past 30 years. This is why you're likely to continue seeing a deterioration in economic figures from China. Whether this is going to be the quote-unquote hard landing or soft landing, or whether it proves to be some sort of stagnation for many years, remains to be seen. But if they follow suit, like Japan did 30 years ago, it ain't going to be pretty. And I am expecting that is what we're likely to see. What is going on between the United States and China in regards to trade, that simply exacerbates the problem. The president, Donald Trump, he wants to come out and flex his muscles, puff his chest out and say, you know, these tariffs are hurting China. Their economy is weak. It's suffering. It's in the toilet. Here, you know, in contrast, here in the United States, the economy has never been stronger. It's the best economy in U.S. history, which, of course, is not true at all. It's not even close. It's not even close. Are there some figures that the president can point to where we have some record low numbers, which is a good thing if it's record low when we're talking about unemployment figures? Sure, it's multi-decade lows there. He wants to tout some GDP figures. We had GDP beat expectations last week. We have a 2.1% reading. Anticipation was for a 1.8% reading. However, if, again, digging deeper beneath the headline and you actually go in deeper into the report, you have a lot further weakness because there were a lot of revisions that were to the downside. Okay? That's not going to be tweeted out by Thunder Thumbs Donald Trump. It's not going to be expressed by his economic team, Larry Kudlow and others, Peter Navarro. These people aren't going to come out and tell you that. They're not going to do it. They have an agenda. They have a mission. They want to completely be a cheerleader for this economy. I get it on the one hand, but on the other, this is what we have seen from other administrations before. We don't need roses and unicorns and rainbows. We need the truth. And the American people need to be told that there are structural issues in this country that need to be dealt with. Simply blaming the Chinese or Mexico or illegal immigrants on the problems that we have caused is a disservice to the American people. Is it politically convenient? Does it get people wound up? Does it get them to the voting booth? Perhaps. But that isn't solving any problems. And I have to reiterate what I said here on Friday's podcast, where perhaps the president is listening to the Capitol News. And I mean this sincerely. Obviously, I have sent him a letter. You can check that out on thecapitolnews.com. And I tweet to the president on a near daily basis. Anything that comes out of thecapitolnews.com, podcasts, articles, anything is tweeted to the president. The man is up 3, 4 in the morning. Maybe he's looking for something to do. Maybe he's listening or reading thecapitolnews.com or following this podcast. I hope he is. Because while the letter was critical of the president, it was constructive criticism. It was to help the man. I want the president to succeed because I want the United States of America to succeed. Okay? So he has to be able to take constructive criticism. If he wants to dish out criticisms, whether constructive or otherwise, he's going to have to be able to take it. Okay? It's that simple. But the president was making some comments in the Oval Office on Friday, and the main gist of the Q&A session with some reporters, just to refresh your memory, was a new agreement between the United States and the country of Guatemala, an agreement with asylum and illegal immigration, or just simply immigration at large, establishing sort of a third country status where if you are south of Guatemala and you're trying to make your way north to the United States, you are going to be stopped in Guatemala. You can file and petition for asylum in Guatemala, and that's where you will stay until the U.S. court system makes a determination as to whether or not you are going to be granted asylum or denied. So that was progress for the president. He, rightly so, was calling out the Democrats for basically doing nothing. Only a handful of years ago, a lot of the things that Donald Trump and his administration are calling for and are pushing for were agreed by Democrats a few years ago. But of course, Donald Trump is now the president, and they can't give the president any type of success or any type of win. So they are putting politics and party ahead of country. This is disgusting. This is a disgrace. This is the type of leadership or lack thereof that we have in this country. There's a lot of blame to go around on both sides. The president is not innocent of this either. But nothing is getting done. The president says, I can get more done with Mexico and Guatemala than I can with the Democrats. Unfortunately, that's becoming a true statement. So we really got to pull ourselves together. And right now, Congress is on recess for the next 6 weeks. I mean, are you on recess for the next 6 weeks? Do these people get paid for the next 6 weeks? Why don't you take 6 weeks off and get paid? You'd love that. I'm sure you would. I mean, they don't do anything while they're there. They fight. They bicker. They pass stupid votes that are symbolic, that placate to their bases. and that's it. They get nothing done. Oh, I take that back. They did get one thing done. They raised the debt ceiling. They did do that. The one thing that Democrats and Republicans and Donald Trump and his White House can all agree on is increasing our national debt. Fantastic. Where are the fiscal conservatives? Where is the business acumen of Donald Trump to cut costs? Evidently, it's not there. Evidently. We have almost $23 trillion in debt and counting. Nobody's talking about the underlying issues with it. Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, defense spending. Of course, the president wants to tout that we spend over $700 billion a year since he's been the president of the United States on the military. Where's that money going? I thought he was supposed to drain the swamp. The military-industrial complex is the swamp. Major banking institutions are part of the swamp. They are making record profits and revenues. Draining the swamp? Serious question. That was one of our podcasts last week. The titles of one of our podcasts, because it's a serious question. I voted for this president. Will I vote for him again is a serious question. Because he was saying the right things, at least as far as I was concerned, when he was on the campaign trail. And we needed to shake up this system. And I thought that could be done with this president. Maybe it will be, maybe it won't. But if we look right now, there's not a lot of drainage taking place with the swamp. It was never going to be easy, but my goodness, this is far from what I expected. I thought maybe we'd pull some things back. Mm-mm, doesn't seem to be happening. Pedal to the metal. And we talk about those numbers and statistics here on a near daily basis as well. But getting back to the president, perhaps listening to the Capitol News and some of the comments he made during the question and answer session in the Oval Office last week in regards to U.S.-China trade talks, is the president's like, we're in no hurry. And I do have to say, this is the president basically saying this, look, China's been ripping us off for years. They did it under the Obama administration, under the Bush administration, under Clinton, blah, 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 going back. I can agree with that. That's not a problem. But the other thing that he said, which is what I say here, and I already stated this a little bit earlier, is it's our fault. This is our fault. This isn't China's fault. It's our fault. We allowed this to happen. Now, what becomes tricky is, of course, this trade war has very little, if anything, to do with trade. Soybeans are not going to boost GDP, ladies and gentlemen. I hate to break it to you. Anybody out there in Iowa, I mean no disrespect to any farmer anywhere, but an increase in soybeans just ain't going to cut it. Okay? This is about a superpower, the United States of America, trying to stunt the growth and the reach and the power of an up-and-coming superpower, at least an economic superpower, of China. Now, I think China is going to be in a world of hurt just because of how they've managed their economy. They're communists, for goodness sake. It will not stand. It will not last. This will be epic, in my opinion. It might be an epic stagnation, but I think it's going to be an epic slowdown nonetheless. Time will tell how they are able to manage their economy and the fallout. They don't have the secret sauce. They don't have a silver bullet. They don't have 1.2 billion people in a communist-run regime, and that's somehow the magic ingredients that can defy all economics, that can defy all business cycles, that can defy all credit cycles. No. 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 Don't believe it when you hear it, because there's a lot of people out there saying that China is going to be just the best economic story for the 21st century and beyond. I'm not buying it. I'm not buying it. Not in the current regime in which they exist. Now, should they really embrace free market capitalism in a democratic or republic system, then I might be preaching or singing a different tune. But right now, not even close. Not even close. That is not the magic sauce. They will have their day of reckoning just like everybody else does. Okay? So pay attention to that and be mindful of that. Also, we have U.S.-China trade talks continuing next week. We have our trade delegation going over to Shanghai, China. I still view this as sort of rope-a-dope, whereby the Chinese are Muhammad Ali, and they're basically allowing the U.S. to come over. They're going to, line up against the ropes, allow us to take our swings at them, and then they're just going to say, okay, nice seeing you, come back again. They're not going to sign a deal, because if you're going to have President Trump saying that your economy is weak, that it's basically in the toilet, and that we are just, taking so much advantage now of China because we're taking in billions and billions of dollars from these tariffs, which of course is not true that China's paying for this directly. Could they be paying for it indirectly by losing some business, by having some suppliers go elsewhere? Sure. But that is not them sending billions and billions of dollars to the U.S. Treasury. That is importers in this country that are paying it, or passing that cost on to us, the consumer, or some variation thereof. So the president continues to push that line, which is a disservice to this country, because it's simply not true. It's not how tariffs work. But he's also touting that, you know, we're taking all this money, and now we're subsidizing and bailing out our farmers. I thought subsidies and bailing out was a bad thing when China does it, but apparently it's okay when we do it. Of course it's not, but that's the talk. So the president is in no hurry with these talks. I think the president is starting to come around that China is just going to wait out the election, because he even said, you know, even if there was a 2% chance of me winning, or you know, they would still wait. They would still wait to make a deal. Because, well, you know, maybe sleepy Joe Biden will get in, or maybe crazy Bernie will get in, or Spartacus or Pocahontas or Senator Kamala Harris, maybe one of those guys will get in, and then the Chinese can continue doing what they've been doing to the United States, ripping us off. So that was not great news. I don't think the markets digested what the president said there. Because for the past year, we've been jerked around that there was going to be a magnificent and fantastic deal. And anytime the market sold off, the president would take to Twitter or send one of his lackeys out there to tell us, oh, there's going to be a deal between the United States and China, and the markets rallied. Well, now you're sort of having the president sing a different tune. We're in no hurry. There's no deadline. This is just a truce. Before, you had a 90-day period where we were supposed to get a deal or there was going to be escalation. There was no deal, so there was escalation. Now there's a truce. We are now selling goods and services and technology to Huawei Technologies, which was named as a national security threat, but a condition to have a truce with China, United States, I guess, acquiesced and bowed down and said, well, we'll sell you some stuff. So how big of a national security threat is it really? So were we lied to? I don't know. But that's a serious question, because there were a couple other points from China, but maybe the president could have bowed on those ones and it wouldn't have been that big of a deal. But the one that has some implications with national security, maybe the president shouldn't have caved in on that one, but nevertheless, he did. So we'll see how that plays out. Some of the political news that was breaking over the weekend was Dan Coats, the director of national intelligence, resigned his post. He has been with the White House for a couple years, which, give the man some credit, that he dodged some bullets. I mean, he was not immune to any type of criticism. There was some back and forth between Dan Coats and the president over the past couple of years. But most people have not survived the Trump administration for this long. However, Dan Coats is stepping down as the director of national intelligence. He is expected to be replaced by Republican Congressman John Ratcliffe. If you've been paying attention to the Mueller investigation, which we talk about here, the name John Ratcliffe should be familiar to you, because John Ratcliffe was a former attorney, I believe prosecutor, and he is a supporter of Donald Trump's. He has attacked this investigation, the Mueller investigation, this Russia-Trump conspiracy. He's basically called it a witch hunt himself. This is, of course, going to get the attention and the praise of Donald Trump. He loves being defended and protected. He loves loyalty. It appears that the president puts loyalty above pretty much everything else, which I don't think is a good thing. I think it shows maybe some insecurity. You shouldn't worry about people being loyal to you if you do the right thing, if you tell the truth, if you show leadership qualities and you lead by example. People should be loyal to you for those reasons. Sort of to demand loyalty and expect loyalty, I don't think is the best trait or characteristic. But the president likes it. And John Ratcliffe, or at least in his words and in some of his actions, has proven to be very loyal and a strong advocate for Donald Trump. Now, in this regard, with the investigation into Donald Trump, his campaign, his administration, I'm pretty much in agreement with John Ratcliffe and the president that this was a witch hunt, that this was, you have to look into the genesis of this investigation. You have to look into the Obama administration. You have to look into the Obama administration's intelligence community. John Brennan, former CIA director, James Clapper, former DNI. I mean, these are some big names that you have to look into, perhaps even Jim Comey and others. We talk about the names all the time. There were extensive podcasts that we've done here that span the course of days when there were some information that came out in regards to behind-the-scenes testimony and this, that, and the other. But this is big news. This is an important position, an important post. Of course, there are some out there who criticize this position of Director of National Intelligence, saying it's just simply another layer of bureaucracy that just clogs up the tubes even more. That very well may be true. But nevertheless, this is an important post. He will have the president's ear because he's basically a coordinator amongst the various intelligence communities and agencies within the United States. And it's the job of the DNI to gather all of that and sort of speak as one voice of the U.S. intelligence community to the president of the United States. Now, there was, of course, some pushback between Donald Trump and Dan Coats over the course of Dan Coats' tenure, because sometimes Mr. Coats would come to the president and say things that the president did not want to hear. The president would come out and say, here's how we're going to do this, that, and the other. This is what I believe. And then Dan Coats would come and say, well, here's what our intelligence assessment is, and we're far apart. You're going left, we're going right. You're going up, we're going down. So there was a mismatch of things from time to time. So obviously, if you're a big supporter of Donald Trump, you're going to agree with the president's assessments, his instincts, what have you. If you're somebody who says, well, we have to listen to our intelligence community, then maybe you think Dan Coats was speaking more of the truth. We're going to have to wait and see what happens. We're going to have to see how John Ratcliffe handles this position. I imagine he will be appointed and will be approved and confirmed, I should say. But this is an important position. It's going to be interesting to see how Representative Ratcliffe manages this. Is this a signal to the rest of the world and the intelligence community, and perhaps even the Obama administration, that, look, I got an attorney coming in as the head of the DNI, and he doesn't like what took place with the Mueller investigation, and he has a lot of very interesting questions in regards to the genesis of this witch hunt, as the president would say. So could we be setting up for some fireworks, ladies and gentlemen, that we've been talking about here for months? Is Donald Trump, as we said in a recent podcast, going up against the Democrats now? Is he going to turn the tables? Is he going to say, enough's enough, now I am going to investigate the investigators? Because John Ratcliffe is going to have a lot of information as the Director of National Intelligence. He's going to know what took place under the Obama administration. Will these things come to light? Will this country return to the justice system that it should be? Not a two-tiered justice system, but justice for all. Because you got to remember that catchphrase that those Democrats were throwing out there last week. No one is above the law. Thank you so much for joining me, ladies and gentlemen. This is going to be a very interesting week politically, economically, in the financial markets. Anticipate Donald Trump to start coming out this week and aggressively attacking the Federal Reserve, which would be par for the course when they have a meeting. Because during this time, there's a blackout from the Federal Reserve. They're not going to make any comments politically or rebutting the president. So the president is going to come full speed ahead, I imagine, as he has done in the past. So stay tuned. This is the Capitol News. I am Alex Kritis. Godspeed.